Welcome to WhiskeyCast, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 421 for April 20th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
We've been around long enough to have stories now. We do all the royal bottlings, which are always interesting, and you know, bottles have been delivered to the Queen and cool things like that. Just start to build up, and you know, it's interesting for everybody, really.
The last time we heard from Andrew Nelstrup 3 years ago, the English Whiskey Company was just starting to release its first British single malt whiskies. Now the Nelstrup family's malts have arrived in the United States, but it took 3 years of fighting to make that happen. More with Andrew Nelstrup later on WhiskeyCast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, your voice, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department all on this week's episode of WhiskeyCast.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. The biggest story of the week was the $245 million sale of Bern Stewart Distillers to South Africa's Distell Group. The deal ends almost 4 years of uncertainty for Bern Stewart, which was owned by CL Financial, a Trinidad and Tobago-based conglomerate that had been under government administration since its investment bank collapsed in 2009. Bern Stewart and Distell have been partners since 2007, with Distell distributing the Bern Stewart whiskey portfolio in Africa. Distell's Caroline Snyman is the company's business director for spirits. We talked by phone this week.
Obviously, it does help if you have a relationship with Bern Stewart. So we knew the brands and the management team very well. But more importantly, if you look at Distell, particularly from a spirits perspective, we believed that there was a gap in our portfolio, particularly more on the global side, that Scotch whiskey could fill. And we bought a cognac brand in 2009, Bisquee Cognac, because we felt that cognac was also a very important globally recognized premium category, and Scotch whiskey is equally globally recognized and just as premium, and that was our next gap to fill.
I know that the folks at Bern Stewart have been doing a lot with very little the last several years while the parent company has been in essentially administration in the Caribbean. What are your plans to try to increase investment or make any changes within Bern Stewart to bring it back up to the level of, frankly, the level of love that it probably needed several years ago?
Yes, we're very excited about the portfolio of brands that sits within Bern Stewart, Scottish Leader and Black Bottle as two very strong blended Scotch whiskies, and then the portfolio of Deanston and Tobermory and Bernahaven as top-end malts. And so absolutely there's a growth strategy, and our intentions are most certainly to grow the portfolio going forward, and that will require investment going forward.
Planning any major investment in the distilleries to increase production or modernize things?
At this stage, I think we're still in an assessment stage. We've got quite a, obviously, there's now the first process is to really integrate and really understand that business and see how we can synergize it with Distell as a total group. But most definitely, from an output perspective, we will be looking to increase our stocks so that we have more supply available for future sales.
Does this also help with increasing distribution for your brands, such as the Three Ships and Cape Mountain whiskies outside of Africa, and using their network to distribute your whiskies now?
Yes, definitely. So we believe that there should be good portfolio synergies. Amarula, which is also one of our global brands, is the second largest cream liqueur on a global basis. And then Bisquee Cognac, which we bought in 2009, is also making good distribution gains and growing its footprint in key markets. So we're hoping that we can get portfolio synergies with those brands as a stronger portfolio across more categories going forward.
I know that the company's U.S. arm is also part of this deal. Can we expect to see increased distribution for Amarula and your cognacs as well as the whiskies in the United States market? I know there was at least a plan to increase Scottish Leader distribution in the U.S. market.
Yes, yes. Now, the U.S. remains a really important market for spirits in totality. We've certainly got our eyes on it, and that's a big opportunity going forward, yes.
Any other changes that you can talk about at this point that will affect the whiskey portfolio?
I think at this stage it's still too early. We're obviously going to spend a lot of time with the Ben Stewart team in understanding what their vision was for the brands going forward and then seeing how we can build that jointly going forward. But we're very excited about the portfolio and the opportunities that this presents.
In a related story, distilling has resumed at Tobermory Distillery on the Isle of Mull after it was shut down for several days because of a lack of rainfall. It's the second straight year that Tobermory had to shut down because of low water levels in the lock that supplies the distillery. Of course, pretty much as soon as the distillery shut down, the skies opened up, and three straight days of rain helped boost the levels of the lock enough to let distilling resume. In other news, Chivas Brothers has received local council approval for its new distillery in Speyside. The distillery will be built on the site of the old Imperial Distillery near Aberlour. No word yet on when construction will begin, but the old Imperial buildings have already been demolished. A bill to make it easier for new distilleries to open in Tennessee is headed to Governor Bill Haslam for his signature. The bill is a boost to Joe Ledbetter and Tim Pearsant, who own Chattanooga Whiskey Company. They've been trying to build a distillery in Chattanooga, but the state's 2009 law that allowed new distilleries left out the county where Chattanooga is located. They've pledged to invest $2 million to build their new distillery in an old downtown factory once the bill becomes law. They're currently buying bulk whiskey distilled in Indiana. Let's look just to the north in Kentucky, where they're getting ready for the Kentucky Derby 2 weeks from now. Several weeks ago in episode 415, Chris Morris told us about the plans for the annual Woodford Reserve $1,000 mint julep to be served for charity at Churchill Downs on Derby Day. But at that time, they hadn't yet selected the charity to benefit from this year's mint juleps. The Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Center will receive the proceeds this year. It's a farm where retired racehorses are able to spend the rest of their lives comfortably. 88 of the special cups are available for purchase now and will be delivered at Churchill Downs on Derby Day. The final cup is being auctioned as part of a package that includes a private tour and dinner at Woodford Reserve, a private tour of the Old Friends Center with a Hall of Fame jockey, and the chance to present the trophy for the Woodford Reserve Turf Classic at Churchill Downs on Derby Day. You'll find more details in the news section of the WhiskeyCast website. And while Louisville gets most of the attention around Derby Day, there are lots of things going on at the other end of the Bourbon Trail in Lexington. Mary Quinn Raymer of the Lexington Convention and Visitors Bureau gives us an update.
We have all kinds of great things going on in Bourbon Country. As you know, there's been a tremendous explosion of bourbon tourism in recent years, and we are having a lot of fun promoting the various distilleries. And in addition to the distilleries and the tours that they offer, many bourbon bars, lots of hotels that are doing really creative hotel packages that explore the Bourbon Trail, and really just doing everything we can to spread the gospel of bourbon.
Now, I know when we talk about Bourbon Country, we tend to refer to your neighbors about 50 miles over to the west over in Louisville all the time. But tell me what Lexington has to offer for bourbon lovers who want to start at the eastern end of the Bourbon Trail.
Well, we like to consider ourselves one of the gateways to the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, and certainly have several distilleries located right within an easy 20-minute drive of downtown. But right in the heart of downtown Lexington, we're so thrilled. We have one new distillery, Town Branch Distillery, that opened up in October and is doing tours and has a great experience for visitors. And we also have a craft tour at Barrel House Distilling. They're one of the craft distilleries that's a part of the Kentucky Bourbon Trail's craft program. And so within literally a stone's throw of the heart of downtown Lexington, we have a craft distillery and a full functioning distillery open now. And that was not the case this time a year ago. So,
and that really was the first time, other than when Altec set up the original distillery out on the west side that became Town Branch when they built the new facility, that Lexington had really had distilleries in many years, right?
It's the first new distillery to be built in over 100 years, and so we're thrilled. A lot of the distilleries that had a presence in Lexington, you know, shut down by late 70s, early 80s, and we had really been void of that presence, and so it's wonderful to have a distillery up and running again in our downtown.
Give me a sense of what bourbon tourism means to Lexington, to Louisville, and to the whole Commonwealth.
Well, in Kentucky, we consider ourselves very fortunate to have two signature industries, horses and bourbon. And between those two things, they really are our tourism economy in central Kentucky. Certainly in other parts of the state, you know, they have other things that they promote. But for us, it is very much about bourbon and horses. Turns out that horse racing and bourbon go well together. So we're having a great time promoting it, and it is reaping great rewards for us and in terms of our local economy.
You can find out more at visitlex.com. Let's update the new whiskeys of the week now. Talisker has released a new port cask-finished single malt. Port Rhee is named after the main port on the Isle of Skye. It's bottled at 45.8% ABV, but carries no age statement. It's a permanent addition to the Talisker lineup, but will only be available at retailers in Western Europe for now. Also, there's word from Diageo that Johnny Walker Double Black will now become a permanent part of the U.S. lineup instead of being merely a limited edition. Old Pulteney is releasing three new malts for the travel retail market this summer. The Lighthouse series will make its debut at a duty-free expo in Singapore next month. Noss Head is matured in ex-bourbon casks. Duncansby Head has a combination of ex-bourbon and ex-sherry casks. And the Pentland Scaries malt uses Spanish oak ex-sherry casks. None of them will have age statements. Now, I don't normally mention a lot of the competitions that many of the whiskey companies run, but there are a couple that caught my eye and you might be interested in. Irish Distillers Single Pot Stills range is kicking off a photography competition for its Stillhouse members. Monthly winners will get their choice of a whiskey from the Single Pot Stills range. Also, Glenmorangie will be giving one golf fan a chance to attend next year's Open Championship at Royal Liverpool. They're looking for nominations for the world's 18 best golf courses. You'll find links for both competitions at whiskeycast.com. Back in December, we heard from John McDougall about his work at the new Dingle Distillery in Ireland during episode 402. John was at the distillery checking up on his clients the other day and posted some of his photos from Dingle on Facebook. Oliver Hughes, the distillery's founder, was in New York earlier this month for Whiskey Live New York, and we had a chance to chat about the progress since his team fired up the stills in December.
We're laying down our spirit. The first went into casks in late December, and we're doing approximately 3 to 4 casks per week. And in the meantime, we've got out a gin and vodka, but I brought over a little taste of our spirit that we're laying down, which in Ireland, as you know, in the law, we can't call it whiskey until it's 3 years old. Here you can call it white whiskey, but we're not allowed to do that.
What's the prospects for getting through those first 3 years until you can call it whiskey?
Well, I mean, we're looking at releasing as a white whiskey, but in the meantime, we have our gin and our vodka, which we're highly delighted with. So that helps the cash flow.
How are things going at the distillery otherwise and getting through those initial growing pains of the first few months?
Yeah, we've been delighted. John McDougall, who I know you've met, Mark, he's coming back to us in Dingle next week. We're delighted with the quality of the spirit because it's a single malt, triple distilled. It's a very fine spirit. John reckons he's created one of the finest whiskies you'll ever get to taste.
And we'll get to find out more about it in 3 years, right?
We'll just wait those 3 years.
Now, why did you decide to get into distilling? I know you ran a brewery down there, right?
Yeah, brewing is my background. I've had a brewery in Dublin since 1996. So, as I think, I don't know, you get a bit older. When you're younger, all you can think about is beer. When you get a bit older, a bit more mature, you start thinking about whiskey.
I like Oliver's thinking. By the way, I tasted the Dingle new make. It shows some promise for the future. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com. But for now, that's the news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Help us select the next Glenmorangie single malt whiskey with the Glenmorangie Caskmasters project. Sign up online through the Glenmorangie Facebook page or on glenmorangie.com.
If you haven't listened to this month's episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings, it's well worth downloading. Our panel gathered at Whiskey Live New York and tasted the Bran Estate Cask, Redbreast 12 Cask Strength, the Invergordon Batch 1 Single Grain from Master of Malt, and the Balcones 5th Anniversary Texas Straight Bourbon. By the way, if you'd like to be on the tasting panel for one of our monthly Skype-based virtual tastings, just send an email to comments@whiskeycast.com. Please put tasting panel in the subject line. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park. Brian Brulette posted a note on the Facebook page that should be familiar to our smartphone app users. I have the WhiskeyCast app on my phone. I'm wondering if anyone else is having problems with the ratings part on it. It worked fine for about 2 years and then just went dead on me. I even killed it on my phone and reinstalled it. That didn't work. Still nothing. Is there anything I can do to get it to work again? I like the podcasts. They're very informative. Thanks. Well, I've mentioned this before, but the problem is linked to our new website. Now, when we changed to our new hosting provider, the links to the ratings data feed on our web server changed, and frankly, that broke the apps. We are working on it with our app developers, but since we've also switched to a brand new searchable system for the tasting notes and ratings, it is taking longer than we planned to make that system work with the app. Now, in the meantime, you can always point your smartphone's browser to WhiskeyCast.com. That way you get to take advantage of all of the tasting notes and ratings, as well as the calendar of events and other features. And our plan is to get the app fixed as quickly as possible. This week's lead story on Distell's purchase of Bern Stewart Distillers sparked some cheering from South African whiskey lovers. Had several emails and tweets from listeners in South Africa pointing out that there's a lot going on whiskey-wise down there, and wondering if I've ever thought about doing WhiskeyCast from South Africa. Well, the answer is yes. I've wanted to get down there for a couple of years. It's something we're working on, too, and I will keep you posted. Now, while I was on Orkney last week visiting Highland Park, I ran into a guy at Helgi's pub nicknamed Whiskey. His real name is Richard Walker. He picked up the name as a commando in the Royal Marines, so you can bet I paid attention real quickly. You see, last year he walked around the entire island of Orkney, about 146 miles, in 3 days to raise money for a charity that helps the families of Royal Marines. He's doing it again this year, and he's inviting people to join him on the Orkney Challenge Walk during the summer solstice in June. He's hoping to raise enough money to refurbish one of the primary school playgrounds on Orkney. I've posted a link to his Facebook page on our WhiskeyCast website if you're interested in more details. And if you have something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com or on our Facebook page. You can also email me. My address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. And Your Voice is brought to you this week by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. This coming week is Whiskey Week in Chicago, with events just about every night leading up to Whiskey Fest on Friday night. You'll find a full list on the calendar at WhiskeyCast.com. Meanwhile, there's a Whiskey Challenge tasting coming up at the Feathers Pub in Toronto on April 23rd. By the way, tickets are still available for the Spirit of Toronto Festival May 11th. I'll be leading one of the tasting sessions that night. The Scotch Whiskey Experience in Edinburgh, Scotland will host a Meet the Blenders session April 24th. Julio's Liquors in Westboro, Massachusetts will have a Glenfiddich tasting that same night. And Andre's at the Monte Carlo in Las Vegas will have a Whiskey Wednesday tasting that same night with the Malvenny. George Grant of Glenfarclas will be in Germany for tastings in Heppenheim on April 25th and Limburg on the 26th. Of course, the Whiskey Fair in Limburg gets underway on the 27th. Downing Street Pub in Houston, Texas will host a Whistle Pig Rye tasting May 2nd. That's also the same day the Spirit of Speyside Festival gets underway, with events going on all over the Speyside region of Scotland. Right now, you'll find more than 320 different whiskey events around the world at the WhiskeyCast website, and you can search for events in your area or places where you'll be traveling. The calendar is brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Anton Sweeney, Spirit Store Foreman, Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey.
What I like about Redbreast is so smooth, mellow, and just after one or two, you just kind of go into a state of a tranquility. I suppose you could say most breasts need a bit of a lift, but this breast gives you one hell of a lift.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know, no Redbreast.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Woodford Reserve. The English Whiskey Company was the first whiskey distillery located south of Hadrian's Wall in more than 100 years when it opened back in 2006. Of course, Hadrian's Wall marks the traditional border between Scotland and England, and while that sets the English Whiskey Company apart from its neighbors to the north, it also set up a barrier that kept its whiskies out of the U.S. for 3 years. That has now changed, and Andrew Nelstrup has been in the U.S. this week for tastings in Washington, New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia, which is where I caught up with him.
Obviously, when we last met, we just had launched a proper single malt. It was a classic Speyside-type whiskey. Since then, you know, peated's come on, and we've done sherry casks and rum casks. And it's been lovely. And you're watching it, the whiskey get its own following, and the distillery itself has become quite a tourist attraction. And then the export markets, some have really performed and others, we haven't got the message across. It's a learning experience and it's been quite interesting.
What have you learned?
Pick importers and distributors you get on well with. It's probably the most important. And people, if they want to drink whiskey, they're going to drink whiskey. So as Bill keeps telling me, the important bit isn't how many parts per million of phenols it's got, it's the story behind it that people are interested in. And we've been around long enough to have stories now. We do all the royal bottlings, which are always interesting, and you know, bottles have been delivered to the Queen and cool things like that just start to build up, and you know, it's interesting for everybody really.
And the bottling you did for the Queen for the Diamond Jubilee back in 2012 got a lot of publicity, didn't it?
It did. I think we've been very fortunate that the Scotch industry have really stopped doing these one-off specials, certainly for the royalty bottling. We seem to have become the English whiskey's baby, that one, and it's been amazing. We're just in the process doing a coronation bottling for the UK market, which looks fantastic. And little things like that, they're the fun bits, you know, and the interesting bits, and you're only doing 2,000 bottle runs. And obviously they back up your mainstay products, which people are going to find in the shops and hopefully take home. So it's...
What's this coronation bottling? Because last time I checked, we don't have anybody going through a coronation ceremony. Or are you doing this in anticipation of something?
No. Very confusing for most people, but it was the Jubilee was 60 years, really, from when the King died. Whereas it was a year later before she actually got crowned. So this year is the Queen's 60th coronation. Nobody else is doing anything, so we thought we ought to celebrate it a little bit.
Do you have anything planned for the royal baby that will be coming later this year?
Nearly an impossible one. You're not going to know until after it's born whether it's a boy or a girl, so we might, but at the moment, nothing planned. You can't plan anything until it's out and a boy or a girl and healthy and you know the name, so it sits on hold.
Let's get away from the special bottlings now. You've revamped the entire range of the core English Whiskey Company whiskies now, right?
Yeah, we've split it up a bit. What we are finding is the initial range, which is still our core range, the chapters, are fine for whiskey enthusiasts and people that really know their whiskey. But you had to know that Chapter 7 was a rum cask and Chapter 10 was an Oloroso cask series. So what we've done is introduce what we call the Black Range. And it's very simple labelling. You know, it's classic single malt or peated single malt. So for retailers that don't have expert staff to assist you, you know what you're getting by reading the label. And then we've also now got the Founders range, which is single cask, cask strength, maximum 300 bottle runs. So sort of covering the proper span of the options, really. And it's proved interesting. And then, of course, there's the American market, which have got their own entirely unique whiskey.
And let's go into that, because that was really the hard part for you to fight. It took a lot of fighting and even some diplomatic issues and discussions to get your whiskeys into the United States finally, right?
I started and was probably far too honest and ticked the wrong box. Well, no, ticked the right box. But it turned out that in sort of subsection 4 million part D, unless you're a domestic whiskey, Scotch or Irish, in order to call your whiskey single malt, it has to have some time in a new oak cask, which is quite unusual. Normally, we're all using ex-bourbon or sherry. So I thought, that's all right, we'll get the rules changed. Single family businesses do not change federal US laws. So while Purple Valley have battled hard to get the rules changed, and while doing that at the same time, we've actually made new whiskey using some new oak, and Purple Valley have got to the TTB and eased it through. It's done the job beautifully, actually. So now we are here labelled correctly with the correct product in the bottle, and we think we've got it right. They went to the San Francisco Awards. The classic version won a silver, and the peated won a double gold, best in category. So couldn't ask for any more than that, really.
So you had enough time while all this was going to actually age three-year-old whiskey and get it ready for the market with new casks, right?
That's how long it took. Yeah, there's nothing fast in the world of whiskey, is there?
Now, I'm curious about trying to change the rules, because Purple Valley was the same company that ran into this exact same issue several years before with Ombret, so they've already had this fight. They've had it with Sullivan's Cove and everybody. And everybody thought you could get the rules changed, right?
They did, but I'm not going to name names, but there are other world whiskies in the US marketplace called single malt, and I know for a fact they don't use new oak. So either there's been some leniency in the form filling, or the reason for the argument was I was convinced that somebody somewhere had obviously had the power to give certain companies a bypass of the rules and go, yeah, that's fine. We still have no idea how those companies are here and labelled as they are, but while we've been scratching our heads and trying to change rules, we've spent the time making whiskey that fits the rules, and according to San Francisco Awards, pretty good whiskey as well. So either way, it's turned out fine and we're here now, so it's good.
And we should explain that the rules in the United States allow basically Scotland and Ireland to set their own standards for whiskey, which don't require new oak. But England wasn't a whiskey exporting country or even a whiskey making country until you guys came along for many, many decades. So it was not grandfathered in, even though if you'd basically moved your distillery 50 miles north, you would have been perfectly legal with what you were doing.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's the madness. You know, even we are closer to some Scottish distilleries than the most southern one is to the most northern. And yet, just that line on a map meant we have an entirely different set of rules. It's extraordinary. I mean, with hindsight, we're here now, we've got great whiskey. At the time, it was maddening. Now, it's actually quite amusing to see how ineffectual we've been changing federal rules. But, you know, you've got to have a go.
Now, how does the whiskey that has the new oak in it compare to the whiskey that didn't have the new oak in it?
We have spent a lot of time making a pure new oak whiskey. Has an extra pepperiness, really, compared to our standard ex-bourbon. And we didn't want it to be massively... Well, there's no way we can make it the same, but we've tried to keep it in a similar vein to our classic and peated that we have for the rest of the world. So it's still got that background smoothness and slight sweetness, which we put down to our hard water. It's definitely got just that hint of pepper that's come from the new oak.
What was the hardest part about making that whiskey work for you and getting it to taste so well at a young age?
We don't have Diageo's labs and people behind us. So to be perfectly honest with you, we went out there, we sourced what we thought were really cracking new oak casks, put it in, suck it and see. But we have tried various things. We've tried putting new make spirit in and taking it out and then filling them, just to sort of get rid of the rawness of a new oak cask. We've tried all sorts of things, and actually I think we're there. It's a fairly similar product. You can, as most people know, my taste buds aren't the finest in the world, and if I taste them separately a week apart, I can't tell the difference. I'm sure that if you put them side by side on a table, the European classic and the US classic, there's a noticeable difference. But nobody's going to do that. You can't buy the European one here, and we can't, and you can't buy the US one back in Europe. So they are as close as we can get them. Certainly, being a very small volume producer, we don't have thousands of casks to go out to blend and make things taste exactly the same. So even batch by batch, we're going to see a difference. But that's the beauty of being a small boutique distillery, I think.
How has that been working for you guys in terms of being so small and literally having to fight for every scrap of market share and every space on a shelf that you can get?
It's been interesting. Some marketplaces have been a real scrap. Some marketplaces haven't worked at all. And others, we just get taken on board. Sweden has been fantastic. We've just won a System Blage tender and we're going really well there and people have taken it on board. And yet, go around Europe a little bit, we get to Belgium and we've hit a brick wall. So we just have no idea why some countries really take us on and others don't. But all in all, we're, you know, sales are beyond where we ever expected them to be, so happy.
And your father's happy as well?
He's definitely happy. He's gone from working about 7 days a week down to four, claiming retirement. So things must be doing all right if he can step away from the distillery for the odd day.
And for those who didn't hear the original interview about 3 years ago at the after the Victoria Whiskey Festival, you and your father basically started this because you'd been farming in that area and decided to take the farming and go one step further, right?
Yeah, to a degree. Father, it's been a lifelong ambition. My grandfather had said to him, one of those throwaway comments, isn't it mad that all this barley has to go to Scotland to be turned into something useful? And we have specialist barley growing farms in the family, and we just thought, yeah, we could do this. And it's been the first time it was mentioned was probably 20 years ago. Single malts didn't really have a market share then. And it never happened. Yeah, we'll do it later. And actually, when we finally went, come on, we'll build it, I think the timing was pretty good. You know, single malts are having a massive revival. Luckily, we're the first in England, and that's made a huge difference. Something to shout about. We are, since we've opened. I mean, another 4 years, and we'll see probably five of us in England. But by then, we'll just have to change from being England's only whiskey distillery to England's oldest whiskey distillery.
And let's explain the difference between the English Whiskey Company and St. George's Distillery, because it's all one and the same, but I know that there is some confusion in that that does cross people up occasionally.
It's been an interesting one. When we started, we were quite naive and we checked around, and obviously there was no English Whiskey Company. That's what we called our whiskey. That's our brand name. And just the postal address of the distillery, we thought, cool, we'll call it St. George's. Little did we know that there was a St. George's whiskey over in California. Now, it's not been an issue at all until now, but now we've come to the States, we are being very vigilant and making sure that our importers and our distributors know that the listing is English whiskey. You know, we don't refer to St. George's in anything we do. We are the English Whiskey Company, and that's the brand that's on the box and on the leaflets and the... So... We try our best, but yeah, it. Luckily for us, I think our branding is suitably different, that we'll probably be all right. But yeah, we just don't use the St. George's brand. I mean, it's
except not, as the name of the distillery.
It's purely a postal address, absolutely.
Yeah. How's your visitor traffic? Because you guys are somewhat off the beaten path, especially for anybody who's visiting distilleries. And I know you mentioned that you're getting more and more visitors, but how many people are making the trip?
It has been the single biggest surprise to us. When we built the distillery, we budgeted on 1,500 visitors a year. We now get somewhere in the region of 40,000 to 45,000 a year. I mean, it helps that you can do a day trip from Holland. We're an hour and a half out of London. You know, I can come back from Paris and be back in my office in 4 hours. So we are handy for a lot of places. You know, it's a 9-hour drive to get to Speyside from us. It's a long way up. So if anyone's in London, very easy to pop it. You know, Oxford, Cambridge, they're all pretty close, so you can call in. And that's been a fantastic side to the business. The tourism side's nearly as important to us now as the whiskey, something we didn't expect.
And you do have distillery-only bottlings there too now, right?
We do. Finally, we have a thing called the Distillers Elect, which the elect range, if you like. So the first one was the distillers, and our head distiller David got free rein to take whatever cask he wants and put together a bottling, and it's gone down a storm. And maybe next time, if Father's feeling enthusiastic, it might be the founders elect or whoever wants to have a go. And they're going to be different each time. That's the whole fun of them, and use up some of the casks that we probably don't have enough to do a national bottling for, but we have. When we first started, we had trial casks. Some worked, some didn't. And some of them are fantastic. So that's what the Distillers Elect is all about. Something different when you come to the distillery.
And you're running 7 days a week now, right?
Open to the public, 7 days a week. Yeah, tours on the hour, every hour, apart from sort of Christmas Day, Boxing Day, and New Year's Day, basically. And it's been amazing.
But the distillery's going 7 days too, right?
No, we The UK had very different rules to the rest of Europe. So we couldn't put in a boutique distillery. And there was a minimum size on the stills. So we actually have a huge capacity at the distillery. I think if we run 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, we have the equivalent to capacity to make about 750,000 bottles a year. So we actually, we're distilling really 4 days a week. And that gives us about 160,000 bottles a year. Obviously, some's going to evaporate. And some will sit there for 30 years getting old. So at the moment, we sell about 50 to 60,000 bottles a year. And that's where we'll probably stay, climbing gently through to the 10-year mark, at which point we'll be hopefully sales about 100,000 bottles a year. And then we just have to check on evaporation rates and see where we're going and what we've got. We are not going to make that awful mistake of, oh, we've got more sales, let's just sell it. Because otherwise you just end up selling the same young whiskey forever. And we're very conscious that we need a 10, 15, 18, 21 as going forward. Not saying they're better, but it's just different things and people want to try older and different whiskey. So,
how's that whiskey tasting as it gets older? Because we've only been able to taste 3 to 4 year old whiskey from you guys, but I'm sure you've tasted some of the older stuff. How is it holding up?
It's... We're really just entering this, I suppose, the seventh year. It's holding up better than we thought. Due to the evaporation rates, we were really concerned that we'd sort of have that McMira issue where, come 6 or 7 years, the oak was starting to really impact. And it hasn't happened. And that we're quite chuffed about that, which we're now beginning to think, well, we will be able to take this whiskey forward quite a long way. And that's good. But obviously, the very first year, we only made a few casks. We didn't really get distilling until October, November. So each time we have a birthday, people go, oh, wow, you're going to release this. And you're like, well, I've only got 3 casks that I can spare, and it's nothing. So generally, we're a year behind on releases to actual age. But it's kind of, we are, you obviously know, there are various other distilleries of a similar age who do nearly an annual release. And we've made a very conscious decision that for the majority of people, those 6 monthly or annual releases, the taste profile doesn't alter massively. So we've stuck with our 3, 4 year old, and then we will do probably an 8 year old, and then we'll do a 10, 12. So there are proper big jumps. So later this year, we bring out, well, I'll be 6, so nearly double the age whiskey, our chapters 13 and 14 in the UK. Be very limited. We don't have that much of it to start with. But I think those jumps will just allow people to see a real difference in how it's progressing rather than bringing out a different whiskey every few months.
And that's later this year will be the chapter 13, you said?
No, we're working on chapter 13. So many superstitious people about, we're still wondering what to do with that. But chapter 14 and 15 will be the new 5, 6 year old sort of chapter bourbon cask. They're going to replace chapter 6 and 11, really. So it's coming.
You still having fun?
Yeah, definitely. It's there aren't many jobs that have no daily monotony. You know, every day is different, and that's cool. Enjoy it.
I'll have tasting notes for the U.S. versions of the English Whiskey Company malts available soon at whiskeycast.com, and you'll find a link for more details at the website, too. That's this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth, brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Discover Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, uniquely matured in 2 separate new white oak barrels, the second deeply toasted and lightly charred for a more complex dimensional flavor. Find out more at woodfordreserve.com. Be double sure. Drink responsibly. Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45.2% alcohol by volume, Woodford Reserve Distillery, Versailles, Kentucky. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with a new release from Tomatin. Legacy is a no-age statement malt that's a permanent addition to the Tomatin range. It's bottled at 43% ABV after maturation in a combination of bourbon barrels and virgin oak casks. The nose is very aromatic with notes of vanilla, lemon peel, and pineapple upside-down cake. The taste is fruity with a good balance of sweetness and citrusy tartness, that same pineapple upside-down cake note with lemon peel, pine needles, and a hint of mint. The finish is crisp and tart with lemon and pineapple notes. I'm scoring the Tomatin Legacy an 89. I mentioned the newest expression in Johnny Walker's Explorers Club Travel Retail range a few weeks ago. The Gold Root is bottled at 40% ABV and was inspired by Latin American spices and fruits. The nose on my sample had notes of mango, grapefruit, pineapple, a hint of vanilla, and a mild smokiness. But that smoke comes alive on the palate. In fact, this one may well be the smokiest of all of the Johnny Walker expressions. The peatiness is balanced with grilled red peppers and pineapples, mango and vanilla notes. The finish is long, smoky, and smooth with subtle touches of grilled fruits. I'm scoring the Johnny Walker Explorers Club Gold Root a 91. Finally, let's look at a cask-strength Beaumont travel retail release. The Beaumont 100 degrees proof refers to the old British proof standard and is bottled at 57.1% ABV. It was matured in ex-bourbon casks. The nose is tart with citrus fruits, soft peatiness, and hints of brine and vanilla. The taste is chewy and thick with good smokiness and cinnamon spice, honey and vanilla underneath, and just a hint of citrus tartness. The finish is long, soft, smoky, and slightly dry, and water adds a nice brininess to the palate and finish too. I'm scoring the Beaumont 100 degrees proof a 93. You'll find these and other tasting notes for more than 950 whiskeys from around the world at the WhiskeyCast website, along with links for WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the calendar of events, Your Voice, The Mall, which features the WhiskeyCast photo gallery and print shop, and there's also a complete archive of past episodes, too. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. And my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.